think we'll get started.
I wanted to begin just by summarizing some of what we've been talking about. My name is Karen Bloomquist, and this is the last session of the week called What Does It Mean Then to Be Christian Today, or to Be the Church Today? And with these concluding thoughts, and then we're going to do some things in a participatory nature that I'll have up on the... The inevitably subversive mission to which God most centrally is calling us today, as uncovered, I suggested, through verbs like seeing, remembering, and connecting, the boundaries of the church need to be viewed in more flexible, less institutionalized, more expansive ways than they usually have been. And one of the words that I've used to talk about that is the word ecclesia, E-C-C-L-E-S-I-A, which theologians have often talked about as related to the church. But I think it's important for us to get to the roots of what ecclesia was all about, at least in the Greek world. Now, the ecclesia consisted just of men, so in that sense it was somewhat limited in our day. But it was based on the notion of a public assembly of free citizens called together to speak freely and deliberately publicly on matters of faith and life in the city. And when the Greek city-states found their governments had become too corrupt and oppressive, sounds familiar, right? They would call for an ecclesia, an assembly outside the civil authority of the city. If enough people came out and refused to accept the existing civil authority, that government would collapse. And in the New Testament, Paul drew upon and further developed the notion of ecclesia theologically to refer to the church as a new community created in and through Jesus Christ. What is important, though, I think for our purposes, is to realize how closely the original idea of ecclesia, as I've just shared with you, the power of persons in community to influence their lives in community in the world for good and ill, is strikingly similar to what is occurring in many movements today that are resisting what is going on. The clear objective is to put democratic processes in the hands of the people. And this also is occurring in much of religious life. But one would think that churches that come out of the Reformation tradition that has emphasized priesthood of all believers would especially be good at this. But unfortunately, priesthood of all believers has often become a kind of slogan rather than what really activates this kind of movement out into the world, which is what the church is called to be about. Ecclesia, as I'm thinking of it here, is a place or event of seeing, remembering, and connecting, of putting together what is fragmentary, pointing to what is true, enabling us to see and act, including in organized action with others. It implies the long-term challenge of nurturing and organizing communities of resistance against the dominant scripts and the injustices they entail, which is what much of the new early church was doing in its struggle against the empire of that day. These communities today are intentionally collaborative across boundaries of religion, geography, and self-interest. And through common practices, things that we would associate especially with the church today, the church as ecclesia begins to counter the illusion, the amnesia, and the disconnectedness that is so prevalent in our world today. And therefore, I would say that's where the real hope of what it means to be church, not in a set-apart kind of way, but in a way that's very permeable and very much connected with what's going on in the world ourselves, and therefore certainly beyond just institutional survival kind of thing. Let me just read one brief other little thing, and then we can talk a little bit about this. And that means that those who are seers, rememberers, and connectors are not necessarily the recognized leaders. And I think that's why it's really important to say that seers are those who can see through the usual presumptions and illusions to name what is really going on, which I think some of you have, you know, been eager to do this week, which is good. Rememberers are those who are able to make the past present and to remind us of those who are absent from the table. Connectors are those who continually seek out and develop new working relationships. They're, in a sense, the organizers or the ones who are actively involved in the world around them, making connections with other people, organizations, and movements so as to work together for the common group, for the common good. And so seeing remembers and connectors, I think, in some ways, you know, we've had in the church kind of, you know, well, there's this group, there's a Sikh, there's a church council, there's this, you know, all the deacons, all the different roles. I'm suggesting in our day, seers, remembers, and connectors are central roles in what it means to be the church in the world today. And I think that could expand the vision of how we think of church. Any comments on what I've said so far? Then we'll go on to what's on here, not the Mother's Day kind of thing. But
is a seer like a prophet?
Yeah.
The modern day one.
Yeah, but seeing through the illusions, you know, going back 2 days ago, and you know, being able to see through all of that stuff and say what's really going on here. So it's the peeling away, you know, what's keeping us from seeing. And I think that's something we all need to have is people who are seers in our lives, as well as a function. And the remembers are those who remember what it was like. I still remember in the one of the old time members in World Church I served in here in Washington, north of Ferndale. You know, there was somebody who, for 30-some years, probably 50 years, had been ringing the church bell. It was a country church. And of course, it was a church surrounded by a cemetery, which isn't very common, you know, at least for urban churches in this part of the country. And he said, and he was also probably fairly conservative politically, but he said, I am not going to let this church die in this community. Because he said, my ancestors from like four generations back are buried there. Mm-hmm. Now, one could say, yes, in many ways, Leonard could be seen as kind of stuck in the past. But he gave a new life of saying, yeah, we refuse to die. Now, that could be an institutional, you know, preservation, which I think is what some of people like that might play, but at the same time, there were others around said, therefore, we have a future. And even though the sin might tell us we have to die, we know there's a future for us here.
It's important to believe there's a future. Mm-hmm. I've heard, we've got a really big facility at our church. It's a big congregation and stuff, but it costs a lot to run things, though, and there are some people that are very worried about the future. Maybe we shouldn't do this because something might happen. And I like that you take the past, but you have to believe there's a future. Otherwise,
exactly.
It's once you start believing there's not a future and start thinking of, well, you know, who are we going to merge with? But I mean, we're not anywhere near there. Why would you? I love that.
And that's the way I was talking about remembering, that it is not just stuck in the past, but is remembering that makes present, remember, for the sake of the future.
Yeah,
it's got to have that threefold.
Yeah, they're thinking, well, we were so much bigger in the past, but that's not where you go. You have to go forward in here now. Yeah.
But also, we survived in the past amid mid-situations probably that were...
Yes, and dire. I forget the bad times in the past.
Yeah. And I think the years of struggle. And again, the seer is the one who uncovers what things are really like, or remembering the remembered does that too. But then the connecting is the... How do we get much more involved in what's going on around us today?
Right. It's not an inward look.
Yeah.
It's an out.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
My son's in a struggling, pretty small church in the Dalles in Oregon. And the church has been super supportive of him getting involved in community-related things and counting it as work. Mm-hmm. Examples are he went to his... Went to a Kiwanis meeting when he was newly there, came out president.
It was like leadership skills.
A young person.
Cults.
He's been doing some mentoring at the high school, some community kind of meals, mm-hmm. and actually last weekend was the assembly of the, I don't know, is it the Oregon Synod?
Oregon Synod, yeah.
And he was, and there were three people that are kind of reimagining what being a pastor is and what being, you know, church is in terms of getting out and doing the sorts of things that he's doing.
No, I think Oregon Synod has especially been good at that.
Have they?
And Susan is on the staff, so we can talk to her more about that. But I think the, and new ways of being church. I mean, I was, when I first, your words, Anne, were reminding me, I was interviewed for some position at a church, I think it was Monroe, here in Washington. And, of course, they don't have their own church building. They worship in, you know, I think a Methodist church. And the first question was, how will you be involved in the community?
Yeah.
It wasn't all the, how can you help us as a church server? Because clearly, being out in the community is how they were known.
Yeah,
exactly. And that was their identity mark, and that was not typical. Right. They want somebody younger, so I didn't get that call. But at the same time, it was wonderful to be asked those questions.
And through some of the stuff that he's been doing, he actually there are four young 30-somethings that are coming to church now.
Yeah.
So it's almost you have to go out to make the connections rather than people are going to come to you.
Exactly.
That's not going to happen as much anymore.
Yeah. No. Okay, I'm going to move on. We have to finish a little bit early today. What I wanted to share with you is something that some of us have begun to move on. And I've been actually revising this during last week and this week because, and this grows out of a lot of us who have been social justice advocates for many years, etc., although it's not just older people. And at least my awareness is that there have been lots of conferences and events and speakers, you know, where people say, oh, I'm really inspired by what she or he said, or what Bonhoeffer did in the past, or what Martin Luther King did, or whatever. And yet the next step of what are we called to as people of God to say and do in our day is often stopped short. You know, people are saying, oh, I'm so inspired and so impressed by what so-and-so did. But then the next step of what does it mean for us in our current situation to take that step. That's oftentimes where people stop short. And so some of us around the country have been in touch with each other and saying, how do we respond to the present scenario of what's going on and do it from position out of our faith? And I had at least one conversation about why we have that theology, but at the same time, it seems as though theology is one, you know, looking at the whole picture is what the church and people of God have done throughout history, and not just picking individual issues, but you know how the whole scenario is affected by a certain kind of logic that, for example, is reigning today, which is a logic of you know, the bottom line, and individuals can succeed, etc., which to me goes against the grain of at least the part of the biblical understanding that I would identify with. And so some of us, and there are probably hundreds of people that we hope can get involved in this, are hoping to get started with a movement called Here We Stand. It isn't really getting started because it's connecting with a lot of movements that are going on already. For example, there's an eco-reformation kind of movement. There's a decolonizing Lutheranism movement. There's all kinds of things that are going on already. So this is not saying do this instead of that, but how can this, again, using the verb connect, how can this connect with lots of other initiatives that are going on? And at least at this point, what we're dealing with is the Here I Stand. Let's see if I can get this to move the right way. The Here I Stand kind of slogan, which, of course, for those who are familiar with Luther might say, oh, here I stand, you know, he stood before in Worms and saying, this is, as an issue of conscience, this is where I stand. First of all, I think it's important that this is identified with the word we rather than I. So it is the here we stand with others. But here we stand is also what a lot of other people, a lot of other movements in our day are doing, you know, out in the streets, certainly here in the streets of Seattle, or in my case, in the Bay Area. Not necessarily doing that without a faith basis, but here we stand. How can we as people of faith, and how are we as people of faith already involved with much of that? So the things on the top, and I'm sharing this with you because if any of you have comments or saying, well, that should be expressed differently, this is a chance for us to, for you to make your input. So this is intended for people who are deeply disturbed and outraged by what is occurring in U.S. society and political life today. Again, these are not just things that, this is just not an anti-Trump kind of thing, but you know, a lot of this has been simmering for some time. Who are yearning for explicit faith theological perspectives to ground, critique, and actively counter this, and are seeking to be encouraged by others to speak and act in bolder ways. And a lot could be said on each of these, but the idea is to keep this as simple and inviting as possible. And so,
why the quotation marks around encourage and how
to be given courage.
Okay.
You know, and there, you know, again, it doesn't necessarily have to have the quotes on it, but
okay.
But the idea is you using courage, we give one another courage, you know, we encourage, you know, which is certainly what the word said, but
okay.
People don't always hear the you know, how am I giving courage by what others are encouraging in me.
Okay.
But that's a good question. Now is an urgent and opportune time when we are moved to confess and live out in public a much different vision and worldview from what now is prevailing in the U.S. and over much of the rest of the world. This Here We Stand movement is grounded in the Hebrew Scriptures and especially in what Jesus said and did in his day, as well as those from other faith traditions. This is not intended to be Lutheran, much less Christian exclusive. Courageous figures from the past may inspire us, such as Martin Luther, Sojourner Truth, Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Mahatma Gandhi, and Martin Luther King Jr. One could add to that list, but the idea is just to give some impulses of where some of the sources of people who spoke up and stood up in the face of what was going on. However, we are called now to stand, speak, and act in relation to today's interrelated social, economic, political, and environmental crisis. Before last week, we had just social, know, social crises. And as pointed out, we need to add environment here. We need to be explicit. That's why this is a little bit more drawn out in terms of what the crises are. But they're interrelated. Christy.
As a suggestion, just to me, I take out political because the other things are so important. It obviously becomes political,
mm-hmm.
but political just polarizes to me.
Okay.
Just as a thought. I think, and just because I know conservative people who would support social issues, would support economic issues, would support environmental issues, and they might have a different idea how to do it, but I think it's better to, I mean, if they want to come to the Rainbow Parade, I think they should come to the Rainbow Parade and not feel like political is leaving them out. And they do say that a lot of times. The education, the universities leave us out, the church leaves us out.
Well, it depends what meaning is attached to political.
Yeah.
Because I would insist that religion is inherently political. I mean, there is a different politics of what it means to be the people in the world. Mm-hmm. And whether that's from the left or the right, you know.
Yeah,
it is a way.
A paragraph on that.
So, you know, in part, the appeal here is to connect with people who are really outraged about what has happened today. So there is no question that this call is especially probably going to be picked up by people who are, let's say, more on the left than the right spectrum. But at the same time, what you're saying, I think, is well taken.
It was like the Women's March. In Fox News, well, it's just an anti-Trump march. But I marched, and I've never marched anything before. It's like somebody had a sign, thank you, Mr. Trump, for making me an activist. Because you got out there, but it was marching for respect for all people. It wasn't anti-Trump, it was pro-respect and pro, mm-hmm. I don't know. And that's what political has, to me, it comes out anti-something.
So maybe
instead of pro-something.
Maybe part of it depends on who is the audience for this draft that you're creating. If
right.
Just a broad audience, they may not understand political the way you do.
Mm-hmm.
As an academic, mm-hmm. as somebody who's been working mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. arena for a long time, mm-hmm. and that's probably true.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of conservatives in my family who, in different. There's definitely doors that are opened when talking to the environment. You know, they mm-hmm. had fires around them for years. And they're beginning to understand why. There's definitely economic and social things you can engage, but as soon as you say political, you have polarized right there just with that. That word political is political now.
Yeah, that's correct to me.
But if it's a more enclosed audience mm-hmm. where people understand everything is political, then that may be fine.
But I think all people, regardless of whether they're fiscally conservative or whatever, pro-constitution, if they're church people, I think that they can support justice mm-hmm. and they can support, they can support all those things. And I think that's where we need to get activated and say, this is a lie. This is what's really important.
Well, I think what you're saying, Christy, is important because a lot of people who would say, oh, I'm not going to do this or that, but around this issue, I will get involved.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I think we're in a new day where the lines are being redrawn.
Mm-hmm.
And what this means of people, I mean, if anything, I think those who voted for Trump, it's been a kind of wake-up call to the rest of us of saying, oh yeah, people are really dissatisfied. Now how can that be rallied together? Not necessarily in terms of a Trump-like candidate, but
not a Pence candidate either, for sure.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's right.
But another term that might be worth considering is governmental, because there, I mean, that's encompasses a lot, and you know, our surprise in how the election turned out. And I think that the whole gerrymandering issue and how that's skewed so much, and just how we talk to each other, the whole judicial, what's happening there. I mean, there's a lot of environment, there's a lot of governmental crisis going on.
Although political is broader than just government.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, we all are politically involved through citizens' movements and whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to go back. You said all religion is political?
Yes, I would say even the most privatized religion that says, oh, it's just Jesus and me, for example, that itself more often is been used, for example, in this case, currently by the right wing, to just keep things in place so that religion gets involved either to keep the status quo in place or to seek change. I mean, to put it in very simple terms. And therefore, I think a lot of people are realizing that even though in the 50s, the kind of Christianity that was often being embraced or preached or lived out in this country was itself serving a very political purpose to keep things in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I'm using political in a broader way, although Christie's advice, I think, is worth paying attention to, whether that should be in here. Because this is trying to communicate a lot of things, and as you can see further on in here, the idea is there would be a blog coming out of this. I'm kind of eager to get back, because I would have to, it'd be something I'd have to work on when I get out of here, which you can't do much blogging up here. But the idea in this paragraph that's now at the top of the screen, rather than turning to hardness, exclusiveness, and fear, we seek to be faithful to a God of justice who brings hope, reconciliation, and redemption for all. So there is a kind of bias here. This is not for hardliners, let's put it that way. There is a clear sense of what we are about.
Well, that's a beautiful sentence. I wouldn't change a word there.
Without such an overall theological framework and story, in other words, that this is what God has been about throughout human history, without an overall theological story to counter what is occurring, we often feel powerless, captive to idolatries rooted in untruths, illusions, and false promises. Comments? Questions? I'll move on to the next paragraph. We invite you to participate in this emerging Here We Stand movement. This will include a website and participatory blog where you are encouraged to submit pieces that engage, at first, do two things. First of all, engage and discuss theological perspectives that shed light on and counter what is occurring today. For example, in New York, I had an event in New York City about a month ago. I did a theological thing saying, in many ways, what's reigning today is kind of the false gods. I mean, again and again, in especially Hebrew scripture, people are cautioned not to follow false gods. Well, it's the false gods of success and highest possible profit and wealth and all the kinds of things. And somehow, as people of faith, what is a God we believe on in instead of all the, and so I'm not, that's kind of idolatries that I'm talking about here, or that we're talking about here.
Will this website, I'm excited about this, would it have links to other groups like the Climate March or the Women's March or the Tea Marches or the events or letter writing campaigns? Will it incorporate secular aware?
Well,
that would be really...
I mean, there's a lot of those kinds of websites already that are making those connections. I mean, I get my mailbox is probably filled every day with lots of that, you know.
Yeah, and mine isn't, and I'd rather just go one place than have to sit through a lot.
But the idea is, as people of faith, how do we speak in and a word, and not just speak a word, but act in light of that? And so, yeah, some of those links would be there. But I can't in any way, because we're still anticipating this, I can't say that it would be comprehensive in that sense.
And would it have possible Bible studies, like text and stuff, that might help people, us and our friends to discern what the truth is, and without preaching, I mean, letting them come to the... Those would be helpful, to have Bible passages, because you know Bibles a lot better than I do, and like some of those obscure ones that aren't in lectionary would be neat. We have a monthly Bible study, and it just would be helpful to have things like that if you had that link. And the third thing that would be really helpful, and this is just kind of schmaltzy, but if there were suggestions, or if people sent in their what to put on your signs, because there are some real clever signs, but they were offensive, and as a, also because we were carrying the banner from our church, I wouldn't carry a rude sign. I wouldn't carry a rude sign anyway. But but some people are real clever with that, and I'm not.
A good website that I'm following some is, it's called Indivisible. Mm-hmm. It has lots of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Indivisible.
Yep, Indivisible. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
With liberty and justice for all.
So I think what both of you are suggesting is that rather than repeating everything that's on these other websites, links provided with that.
Links. Yeah. Robert Reich is another really good one who writes stunning stuff.
The idea is this, especially as you can tell from, maybe you can't tell from the top here, but anyway, the idea would be to really encourage people to do their own theological thinking, be they trained theologians or not, naming some of the theological framework for understanding what's going on today, as well as pointing to others that help us see that. So there's a lot of, as I've been saying throughout this week, there's a lot of secular analyses, some of which you've mentioned, that I find very helpful, but helpful for raising the bigger theological question of who then is God, for example, or what is God like in the face of that. And so this particular effort is to keep it focused a bit on that, but that means being informed by all these other sites and other analyses and perspectives, and we would anticipate many of the people that would become a part of this, and I do have a piece here, so give me your name and email, even if you say, oh, I don't necessarily want to be a part of this, but at least when we get this together, I can add your email to whatever we're developing at that point in time. So there would be the engage and discuss theological perspectives that shed light on and counter what is occurring today. And secondly, and this is more the action kind of thing, examples of how Here We Stand is occurring in your locales, as well as notice of upcoming events. So for example, if the folks in Olympia are planning something, we're going to do this in about a month from now, etc., or next week or whatever. But the idea is to have a little advance notice. So then somebody else that's a part of this, and actually the person who right now is working on this with me is Paul Wee, who is in Lacey, so pretty close to Olympia. And so people can say, oh yeah, that's happening, etc. It's about time, so. So anyway, that's... And I indicated there one of the things that we're anticipating will happen. And let me just mention these two things, seeing our time is vanishing. Last last week I focused a little bit more on this project, which I've been a part of for 5 years. But I love the graphic. I don't always nail things to church doors, says Lucifer, but when I do, it starts a movement. And this particular movement has included Mennonites, included Methodists, Anglicans, Catholics, Jews, and Muslims. So this is not a narrowly Lutheran kind of thing. And as you can see from here, through the 5 years, we produced about seven books, because one is now in Spanish, with these titles, Liberation Through Justice, From Mammon, etc. And I'll be almost finished, those of you who are coming for the next session. And there's one volume that I have edited or co-edited with others, and all of these should be available through Amazon. So Radicalizing Reformation is the byword here. The person I mentioned in that last session here, Ulrich Dubrow, is the German who has especially initiated this. And I just discovered when I was here that he will be here on the West Coast. He will be giving a keynote lecture or presentation at PLU in early November. Those of you that are up here, and we're hoping now to work out something that he can get to the Bay Area also in connection with his visit. Then just to one last, this is the last thing, and the Radicalizing Reformation had its final event to kick off the Reformation year in 2017 in Germany. And out of this came a declaration called Justice Today. And I have some copies of it if any of you are interested in it. They're just some excerpts of it. So it deals with five different aspects. The way in which this capitalist culture has especially permeated all that is. The struggle of small farmers, as one of the Latin Americans participating in this said, the peasants' war is not over, it is still going on. And even though we might not call small farmers in this country peasants anymore, that's essentially what they're called in many parts of the world. There's a lot of emphasis on in this commitment to justice for Palestinians, this is where, for example, Jews like Mark Braverman, who I think is in Portland, have been very involved in that. All forms of violence, and then the last part is participatory institutions and practices that are based on the fact that no human being is illegal but created in the image of God. And at the end of this section, which I worked on, we urge that in congregations and other settings, critical Bible studies engage the urgent systemic challenges in their context and globally, encourage people to think critically about the systems dominating their lives, and empower them for individual and collective resistance and transformation of these challenges for the sake of greater dignity and justice for all. So the Here We Stand kind of movement that we're trying to get started in this country especially is related to this global Radicalizing Reformation kind of thing and the justice alone kind of statement that came out of that. So I have copies of any of that if any of you want further.